is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The G7 meeting in Japan. At the same time, there was a Quad meeting organized quickly because the President of the United States was not able to go on to the Quad meeting scheduled for Australia after Japan. The Quad meeting turned on what is to be done in the Indo-Pacific, given the Chinese aggression, especially we've seen recently in the Solomon Islands. I welcome Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, my guide on the Indo-Pacific, this vast canvas, all these island states, and the major players looking to enhance or assume the island states. We look at India, however. Prime Minister Modi left Japan, as I understand it, and traveled to Papua New Guinea. Why? What was there? What is important about India as a member of the Quad taking charge of these states that are vulnerable to Chinese interference? Cleo, a very good evening to you. Why did Prime Minister Modi go to PNG? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Because they are very smart in India about strategic issues. And they took a look at a map and they've taken a look at how China is functioning and how regional allies are functioning. And they've realized that there is a big challenge, at the very least, and likely a threat that's coming across the oceans through the Pacific Islands, but also through some of the larger countries up into the Indian Ocean. And they've seen the sort of Chinese takeover that we're seeing in the Pacific Islands. They've seen attempts at that at the Indian Ocean Islands, like in Maldives and in Seychelles. So they know what they're looking at. They're looking at China trying to put down footprints that can turn into bases or at least forward operating locations across the region. Very similar, in fact, in some cases, in exactly the same locations that the Japanese tried to do during World War II. And the Japanese got all the way to the Andaman and Nicobar Islands, which are Indian. So they know what they're looking at. And they also know that India is uniquely placed, especially among Quad countries, to offer the people of the region and through them their leaders, because they are still democracies, what they need to be able to displace the on-the-ground entry points that China uses, like low-cost services and goods, and replace them with Indian services and goods that are more reliable, usually just as affordable, English-speaking, and so can provide that kind of human security that ultimately can translate into actual kind of hard regional security. So that's why he went. He went to try to address the threat head-on and provide tangible solutions that can make a real difference on the ground.
The Forum for India-Pacific Islands Cooperation, was it well attended? What do we know about what was achieved?
So Prime Minister Modi has been focused on the Pacific Islands since very soon after he took office in his first term. He went to Fiji in 2014 and held the first FIPIC, those forums are called. Then they held and announced quite a lot of very well-received initiatives then, including easy visa access for Pacific Islanders to India, which is something that it resonates across the region, because it's very hard for a Tongan, for example, to get a visa to go to their close neighbor, New Zealand or Australia, but they can walk into the UK and they can get Schengen visas for Europe. So India is saying, you're welcome here also, whether they go to India or not. It resonated. That's the sort of kind of smart engagement they do. So they did a second one in Jaipur in 2015, and then it just kind of languished. Nothing really happened for a very, very long time. And now that whole process has been resurrected. Their Ministry of External Affairs has more dedicated people looking at the region, at Oceania. And by choosing to actually go there to a place like PNG, what it does is catalyzes in whole levers of the bureaucracy. It makes them have to learn about PNG. If the prime minister is showing up, then everybody needs to know who he's going to meet, why he's meeting them, what to deliver. So it's a very focused education project for the Indian bureaucracy and business community. And on top of that, it wasn't just a bilateral with the leadership of PNG. It was, as you mentioned, the third FIPIC meeting. And they brought in leaders from 14 Pacific Island countries And not through the Pacific Island Forum. They did it directly with the countries, not through a regional multilateral organization, just bilaterally. So they also had to learn about all of those countries. They were bringing in the priorities of each of those countries. It was a huge effort. It took many, many months. They set up a secretariat in PNG. They paid for the Pacific Island leaders to come in. And the original intent was to have two or three days with Modi there for most of it, a large Indian business delegation, and to really jumpstart this India-Pacific Island engagement in a big, deep, and major way.
Was there disappointment that the president was not able to attend because of duties back in the U.S.?
So there was disappointment that the president initially intended to go, because what happened was this was originally set up as an India-Pacific Islands country meeting, and as mentioned, India was the country that brought all the Pacific Island leaders together, paid for them, organized, did all the logistics. And then suddenly the president of the United States was announced to be attending in the middle of it, which meant that Prime Minister Modi's engagement had to be cut short. The business delegation got reduced, and all the plans had to be redesigned in order to accommodate the visit of the president. And at one point, it looked like the Australian Prime Minister might come, although he didn't, and the New Zealand Prime Minister would come, which he did. And so it was really quite disruptive. And so then when the U.S. president canceled and Blinken, Secretary Blinken went instead, there was another readjustment that had to be made. But all of this disturbance, because it created a friction between some in the Indian community and some in PNG, because Papua New Guinea, you know, basically seemed like it was pushing aside India in order to accommodate the U.S., disappeared on the tarmac when Prime Minister Modi landed. He was unusually greeted at the airport by the Prime Minister of PNG with a, I think, 19-gun salute. But then the Prime Minister of PNG did a very kind gesture, respectful gesture, which is he went to go touch the feet of the Prime Minister of India, which in an Indian context is a deeply respectful gesture that is an initiation for a request for a blessing. And so it's a reciprocal relationship. It's a sign of mutual respect to ask for a blessing and then to request a blessing. And that went front page news all over India. And now Indians who've never heard of Papua New Guinea suddenly have a very warm spot in their heart for Papua New Guinea. It was a very lovely piece of diplomatic course correction that may resonate for a very long time.
You have recommendations about what can be done now that the meeting has been accomplished, no matter all of the excitement about who's here and who's not. What is an Oceania House in Delhi? What will that do?
Well, one of the problems is that these are small countries. I mean, Papua New Guinea is different. Papua New Guinea has at least 9 or 10 million people. So it has a larger population, larger landmass than New Zealand. It has a lot of resources, but that's an outlier. Most of these countries are very small. So Tuvalu has a population of maybe around 10,000. Nauru as well, a little bit smaller. They don't have the money to set up diplomatic missions in a place like India. So if India were to set up a permanent base where they could, diplomats from the region, businesses from the region could set up and begin that engagement, I think that would make a big difference. But Modi did announce a 12-point action plan of things that India will be doing in the region, including, you know, solar projects, desalination, but some training, 100-bed super specialty hospital in Fiji. Some of them are just they're going to make a big difference, like dialysis units across the region, and providing low-cost prosthetics for people who've lost limbs. And there's still issues with unexploded ordnances left over from World War II in a lot of countries in the Pacific. Those sorts of things can transform individual lives, which means families and communities, and that will start to resonate.
Cleo, you've attended these islands. I've only ever read about them, but I was discovering recently in a conversation with a scholar that at the same time there was that enormous movement of people from Europe to the Americas. This is the 18th and 19th century. There was a comparable movement of people from the subcontinent throughout the Indo-Pacific basin, East Africa, West Africa, South Africa, and all of these islands. So are we looking at populations that have already had Indian influences, ethnic Indian influences, and that the efforts of India are welcome or at least resonate with the people who live there?
That's a very interesting question. And there were large population movements even earlier than that, which is why, you know, the Thai kings have the word Rama in the title, why you have Hinduism in Indonesia, for example. The trade routes were all across everything that China pretends in terms of its kind of global Silk Route in a maritime zone is actually what was coming through India. And before that, the Austronesians were going across the region as well. And there have been some articles in the Indian newspapers about things like Dravidian place names in Papua New Guinea that could go back even further. So all of these kind of civilizational echoes are very helpful. But apart from that, there's just a lot of cultural compatibilities. These are family-based cultures, very focused on education. A lot of them speak English as a second language. There's a compatibility. Economics are often communal that make the engagement very natural. And a lot of solutions have been found in India around things like village-based economics, for example, that have direct applicability in the region. And culturally is one issue, but also environmental as well. India has a lot of similar climates, hot, subject to storms, erosion, and has found solutions that it can share. And of course, there are things in the Pacific Islands that can be shared with India to be very, very helpful as well. So it's sort of like old friends or cousins finding each other in terms of the potential for just ease of engagement.
Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy is about a meeting in Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea by the esteemed Prime Minister of India and the gathering of the tribes throughout the Indo-Pacific. We're going to turn to a conversation Cleo had with members of Congress recently about this same challenge of China in the Indo-Pacific and Oceania. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.